Hamilton. You're listening to Indy 101.5 FM. CIOI.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Thanks so much for jumping in again this week and listening to me talk. And I really appreciate it. This is Hot Shots on Air, and I'm Sarah Jessica. And tonight I'm hanging out with Madison Daniels. He's a Mohawk music student and the lead vocalist and guitarist of indie rock band Frantic Lullabies. You can find Madison on most socials under either Madison Daniels or under Frantic Lullabies. So, hey, Madison.
Hey, Sarah, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here.
Fantastic. I guess just to kind of give a little introduction into who you are and what you do, how would you describe your sound and style as a musician?
You know, the thing is that I've been trying to answer that question properly, Sarah, like especially on interviews with you before, like just to sort of nail it home. I always give like the answer that I'm sort of based in rock, and then I sort of move around that by like jumping through genres and like finding little things that sort of bend my ear, sort of finding those things in like funk music, prog music. But something that my friend actually pointed out to me last night, which maybe we'll do something more for the viewers, is especially if you, or I should say listeners, is that if you basically mixed Sean with Hail the Sun, that's essentially what my friend had like described as my music. And I went and listened to it, and I was like, that's actually very close. And I'm now going to pay attention to both of these bands a lot more.
Cool. Very interesting. I don't think I've listened to either of those.
It's a vibe.
Yeah.
Or you could just listen to Frantic, I suppose.
Either one. Who would you say are your biggest musical influences?
I think that's changed.
Yeah.
It was something where I, for the longest time, I was saying Radiohead, and that's still true. But it's almost as if the list keeps growing, and my answer for that is ever-changing, because I almost, I always want to say something different, almost. But Radiohead is definitely one of them. I'm finding a lot of the production behind Nick Hakim. Cigarettes After Sex is another great example of just like this very simple but very lush types of recordings.
Yeah,
I've been getting a lot more into recording as like a result, but at the same time, it's something that listening to how they, all of these bands, Nick Hakim, Radiohead, like Cigarettes After Sex, just how they treat sound has been something that I've definitely been very lackluster in my own practice. And now that I've actually got that more under my belt, I'm like, oh, this is how they did this and this, and I'm just flabbergasted that it took me this long to get here.
Right. Yeah. What sort of initially sparked that interest in more of the producing side, and like when did that start for you? Was that kind of an introduction with like Rona?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
it was something where I had realized how uncertain that everything else was sort of getting, and I suppose my situation personally was one that I knew I have a few extra bucks in the bank. I have some, like, a lot of time, like, to myself here where I can learn something new, which I feel like everybody sort of all learned simultaneously. So what I ended up doing was picking up an audio interface, a condenser mic, I think, like, another mic, and just hooking that all up and sort of capturing what I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And then realizing, oh, this is actually going pretty well. I'll also get like a pair of good speakers, and really make it like an at-home production type thing. But getting back into Mohawk especially, I was really thankful to sort of do like this run through again with like one of the alumni, Jamshed, who is just a wizard at what he does.
Yeah.
And now it's basically contributing to what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Well, that's really cool to kind of be involved in not only the music like creation process, but also the production process.
Absolutely. It's something that I personally, like for my first run through Mohawk, it was sort of a series of elimination more than a series of getting to that graduation spot. I had talked to Emil, who is like one of like the guitar profs there, and he's just so good at what he does. And the thing was is that he's a very session musician. He's somebody that just comes in, sits down, you tell him what to play, and he just knows what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So when I learned that about him, I was like, oh, I want to do that. And then he's like, well, if you're going to do that, you're going to have to like do everything I say. And if you don't do everything I say because you did something in another class, that means you're not doing it, mm-hmm. which is what you should do. So it was kind of vexing to say, all right, well, I'm putting this money into a program in order to become a better guitar player, just end up being a better music producer. And then I realized, okay, I can't do both at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just with time. So yeah. At that point, I realize now I can actually focus on two with Rona being up among us.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, that's really cool. I feel like it really strengthens your portfolio.
Absolutely. I feel strengthened.
Yeah. Beautiful. Do you remember what you listened to as a kid and like what your parents grew up with, that sort of thing? And do you feel as though that has an impact on your current style?
Oh man, I had to think about this because I was, thankful enough that you gave me like a heads up for the questions. Cause this one would have stumped me like for sure.
Yeah.
I think it was a lot of, hair metal at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what Led Zeppelin was doing. Definitely Van Halen was the first thing I saw at 4 years old, where I couldn't believe that a guitar could sound like that. I really thought it was just like baked or something.
Right.
So
you thought it was all like acoustic. Like that's all you pictured as a kid?
Yeah, basically. Like I had thought that like what you can do is like chords and like, you know, just strum and do that kind of stuff. To know that you could actually like play just with your fingers on both ends, which of course, like I got introduced to like finger style, and then that just like blew my head clean off because I just didn't know how that was even possible.
Yeah.
But what else? There was Van Halen. There was Led Zeppelin. There was a lot of radio, definitely, like when I was growing up, and. It's definitely something I feel like I've left in the past, just not because it's not good music, because of course it is, but it's something where it feels like I kind of laid my groundwork there. I understand it. I appreciate it. But as an artist, it's not something I return to as like, ah, yes, Guns N' Roses. I will throw myself completely into this band and become completely infatuated for the next 50 years. It's more something that I got what I could out of it. And especially out of Slash's playing, and then I just moved on.
Yeah, totally. No, makes sense. I think that's the majority of answers when it comes to that sort of question. Like, you know, what did you listen to as a kid? And it usually kind of influences what you get into as an adult, but those early bands and, like, albums or whatever don't usually stick around.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
It was, I think during... Actually, you know what? It was around the time that I got obsessed with Radiohead, where it was a time where I realized I was kind of shifting and like really trying to listen to things and trying to understand them, not because I liked them, but because I knew that perceptually, like when you grow up kind of like in a vacuum where just like all you're listening to comes from the radio, you then hear, say, for example, like the Microphones, like their first album. Which is mostly just noise, and you're listening to it, and it's just all this feedback, and it's just like, sounds like your brain is getting ripped in half. And I'm just like, there is something to this, and I couldn't for the life of me explain it, but it's almost as if, like, I had realized then and there, like, oh, music can be anything.
Yeah, totally. And I think as though, I think like another thing about early influence is that a lot of the time your parents sort of get you into those, you know, and then you sort of go through that phase of like, oh, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to listen to what my parents listen to and all of that, right? Do you feel as though you had that as well?
Absolutely. It was most likely why I drifted like away from most of just radio types of music, just because I remember playing for my dad's friends, especially, like, they love what they love, and I love it too. Mm-hmm. But when it's all that they listen to, I realized, oh, all right, I'm going to get this much out of this scene, which is kind of a problem with Guelph anyway.
Yeah.
But then I had broken to the indie scene, and I had broken to types of, like, progressive and, like, math types of rock, and also a lot of, like, electronic music, which is just fascinating and something I wish I could exposed to sooner, but really it's the path of like many, I think, kids these days, where we just get exposed to what the radio offers and then we just kind of go from there.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. What do you feel was the first time that you listened to either like a song or an album and you thought, wow, I wish I made that?
Wow, that is a tough one. You know what? Actually, I'll give you a good answer because this song I thought was just very in my wheelhouse.
Okay.
It's a song I keep returning to because I just can't like believe how good it is. It's called Dex Dark by Radiohead. It's off of A Moon-Shaped Pool, which came out in 2016.
Yeah.
And it's just, I suppose, for the time like when that came out, but 2016 was when I was really experimenting a lot more with just riffs and just trying to make something catchy. And when I heard Radiohead combining how they do what they do with all this soundscape stuff with literally just like a pentatonic riff, I was like, this is why I love this band. They're just not afraid to just give you what you want, but you don't always expect when they do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think it was about that song that really drew you to it?
I think it was a definite influence on the fact that aliens seem to play quite a bit of a role, seeing like spacecrafts in the air, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It builds very slowly. That's the thing I love about it, is that it builds a lot of tension, which if like people who are fans of my music know this about me, it's that I will often try to sort of build a soundscape that is ambiguous, meaning that you kind of don't know where it's going next, which is what I love doing with my songs, is sort of like nailing something. And then how we get to the next thing is sort of my biggest secret, which I just love doing, is this ability, especially through learning this through both like Dusty and all the like composition, all the composers, that he teaches, like Schoenberg, how it's like this, let's say, tonal ambiguity. It's a diminished scale, let's say, the dominant chord that just is so out of place, perhaps, in the wheelhouse of saying, like a major or minor scale, and then just pushing that even further. That's something I just like never feel very comfortable with, is just sitting still with in terms of songwriting, which I think is my powerhouse move, is just that I just love creating music and getting my influences from just about anywhere. I don't really care where they come from. It could be a classical composer. Well, I guess more of a modern composer like Schoenberg, who lived in the 1900s, or get it from Radiohead, get it from, I don't know, T-Pain, like just something completely random like that. And that's why I just keep an open mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's definitely best. Yeah. Do you remember what the first instrument you picked up was? Was it the guitar?
It definitely was. Mm-hmm. It was the guitar when I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
I was a really hyperactive kid. So when I was a kid, I had no attention span whatsoever. I was identified with ADHD in my late tweens, early teens, like that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was definitely a thing that I was handed a guitar when I was 8 years old, and I just realized I just don't have like the patience for it. I don't have the curiosity maybe at the time to just sit down and learn this thing. So it took another, I'd say, say 6 years before like I officially caught up to myself and said, okay, I'm very curious to play this, as I had seen a fellow student when I was in middle school. She picks up a guitar and she's doing all this cool punk stuff, and I'm like, wait, you can just do that? And I was so fascinated. I was just like, this is everything I want to do, and you're doing it as a kid, and I'm seeing all these adults do it, and I'm realizing, wait, are you telling me Van Halen started at 2 years old? He began so early. I could have done this years ago. So mm-hmm. I just picked one up from my local music store, at the Octave Music Store, and learned from like a DVD from like 6 months, because my parents wouldn't pay for lessons.
Yeah.
And they said, if you just learn everything off of this DVD, we will get you lessons. I suppose they thought it would take a lot longer, but mm-hmm. it was 6 months of like learning all the guitar stuff. And then they said, okay, great. Well, there's also this bass like section. And I was like, oh, great. You're going to make me learn the bass section. Turned out to be like a blessing in disguise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when were vocals introduced for you? When did you begin singing?
Singing, I suppose it is the same thing like with everyone, that you sing along the songs. But I think I'd learned it as a necessity, mm-hmm. because especially in Guelph, the scene is just so small and mm-hmm. very niche, in the sense that all these people seem to be singer-songwriters. They seem to be doing like their own thing. You kind of get the impression that you should be able to do more than one thing. Another blessing in disguise, where I then learned how to sort of put myself into the singer-songwriter aspect, where I could learn the guitar. And then I didn't think I had much of a voice back then, but it was something that I figured, if I'm going to play the guitar and I want to create songs, I better learn how to sing instead of just waiting for a singer to come along. So I suppose you could say it was born out of necessity.
Sure, yeah. When do you feel as though you began looking at music as something more than a hobby?
I think that as long as I can remember, I've always pictured myself up on a stage. Mm-hmm. But when it officially became more than a hobby, I almost think was when I realized how many advents of my life were being affected by simply wanting to play the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
When I started writing as a result, and I started like putting all these words together and realizing that I just sort of have this way with words in my own perspective that is being appreciated not only just by myself, but by people I show this to, like friends from high school and then friends from, friends of friends and that kind of thing, like almost perfect strangers now. Actually, no, I should say perfect strangers. I don't know if you know this person. She was actually at our last show.
Mm.
I heard Joanna, but she came up to me. And she was just blown away with how, like, we did. And that was sort of, like, where I feel like it went from, oh, yeah, like, this sounds cool, like, from when you're a kid and you're just writing songs, to what it is now, where I feel as if this is sort of, like, what it all meant, is that it was something that I enjoyed for myself. And then I started to show people, and people started to appreciate it. And I realized, oh, I don't have to be the only person listening to this. I now have this need, like, physically to share things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Losing my questions here. One sec. Losing my spot. I know that you attended Mohawk for music school, obviously, for jazz school. But did you take professional lessons outside of Mohawk?
I'd say so, yeah. It was, I suppose those 6 months after learning off of the DVD, was immediately getting thrown into guitar lessons,
mm-hmm.
At 15, and learning as much as I could for about another 4 years. And then mm-hmm. at that point, I knew I was on my own from, I think, 19 to 20, not to say that I didn't have help. I still had the very kind and generous help of a teacher by the name of Kevin Saltarelli, who really taught me, I think, all it is that I understand about like the music business. He had got me into my first band at the time, and he was teaching us sort of just how to interplay with each other, how to understand like the business and how to understand theory, just sort of like a one-man just wheelhouse of just everything you need to know. So every question I had, he could answer.
Cool.
And I sorely regret, and I seriously need to get back in contact with him, because there's so much I know that he knows that I'm sort of like learning the hard way by myself, which I still very much encourage people to do. But there's definitely a few questions in terms of theory, in terms of a business, that I always trust him first before I sometimes even act on it, because I just know that he's somebody that I can rely on heavily for either just lessons or just his knowledge, just because he's that kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's super cool to have, and yeah, I hope you can get back in contact with him.
Definitely. I encourage anybody to take lessons from that guy. If you're in, like, the GTA, and, like, I want to go to, like, the Octave Music Center, ask for Kevin, and I'm sure he'll make you into the musician that he's made me.
Sick. Awesome. What do you think was the most important lesson that you took away from music lessons in general? So either from Kevin or from attending Mohawk, what do you think was the biggest lesson you took away from that, from studying music, I guess?
The biggest lesson I believe I've learned is to fail constantly and be okay with that. The idea that people sort of have of learning, and this is something I definitely caught myself doing dozens of times, and it's something I'm now instilling in students now that I talk to, is that you can play the same thing 100 times and fail at doing that. And it's always the 101st try that will get you feeling comfortable. Not necessarily because the goal is to play something 101 times. That's just an example to get them playing. It's that you are constantly doing something, and whether or not you think it's actually doing something, you are garnering results, whether you want to do it, whether you don't want to do it. I always use like the analogy, and this is a little bit more of like a, I think it's a Buddhist practice thing. I definitely got this from somebody who was teaching themselves like Buddhism at the time, that if your entire life revolved around placing your finger against a brick wall, and time was irrelevant, and you lived your entire life, you know, say thousands of years, however long it would literally take for that pressure from your finger to push through that wall, be it hundreds, thousands of years, you would eventually push through that wall. If it means a billion years worth of failure for you to garner this one thing of success, I sincerely hope that you commit to that thing, keep failing, keep doing well, you know, succeed in areas where you feel like you will succeed. It means bursting through that wall, keep going.
Yeah. And you're almost supposed to fail. It's like, it's how you learn, and it's how you, it's completely normal, and everybody does, right?
Oh, exactly. I'm a person, like a prime example of somebody who was way too hard on themselves way too early in life. And I feel as though that definitely held me back. And I wish more people had just told me it's okay to fail, because it just means that you are committed to what you're doing and that you care. And if you care, thank God, because somebody has to.
Exactly. So, I mean, you already kind of mentioned it, but you grew up in Guelph. Was there a music scene? Can I even ask what that was like?
It honestly, for the most part, consisted, like, especially as a teenager, it consisted of some band kids. It consisted of, like, our local music shops and, like, maybe a few bands here and there. There are definitely bands now that I can talk about, because it took a lot of hunting. Like years and years worth of hunting. Teddy's Atlas is, of course, one that is on like the top of my list. There is, oh my God, what's this one band called? It's a friend of mine named Will. He has a band, Drunk at the Library. That's what they're called.
Love that.
And the thing that's so niche too about like the Guelph music scene is that literally one guy, I think his name is Mike. Might be Mitch. I know it's like an M name. This dude is in like four of the most popular bands in Guelph, and I love that for him.
Yeah.
He's just everywhere, and I wish I was like that too with my own scene. But I guess I'm fortunate enough to just have my scene sort of instilled in Hamilton and then just like bring it over to Guelph.
Yeah. I mean, I see that happening in like Hamilton, which is like, you know, a city, you know, like one guy and like a whole bunch of different bands. So like, of course, that's going to happen in like Guelph's like small towns. Yeah, totally.
It's very much that way with like even the now current members of Frantic, where like myself, James, Cam, Tommy, like you'll see like all of us everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's a thing where just like, you know, you can love Frantic, and I love Frantic, and it's a thing where I encourage people to definitely look for us there, because it's where we're going to gather like the most. But doing gigs with friends is honestly almost just as invigorating, I think, as a Frantic show. I, of course, have that bias of like creating this thing and then like seeing it like sort of flourish like the way it is compared to how you think it's going to go at like 14, where is it going to be cool? And then all of those dreams sort of come true from like your perspective of being like 22 in a band playing at a Doors Club gig versus at 14 in your bedroom with like a guitar writing those songs and then sort of garnering better like results because you made those shittier songs as a kid and then just brought all that knowledge into today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I'm not quite sure what James is up to, but that's definitely, I mean, I know Tommy and Cam are in like what, like six different bands? Like,
I think a minimum of six, yes.
Yeah, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. I don't know how you juggle that.
Oh, we don't. No, I'm just kidding. But we definitely have like a lot of bouncing around to do, and it's something with schedule, which like we always fight with, where it's like, all right, we're going to have this time to practice, and then this much time you're going to have for these other bands, and then we're going to practice here, record here, and we're not going to change that.
Yeah, you got to work on their schedules, I guess. They're wanted men.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm. Who are some... Oh, so you coming to Mohawk for college, obviously you got involved with the local scene here, played at basically every venue, you know, you're very familiar with the scene here in Hamilton. What are your opinions of it, which I think obviously has changed with Rona, but what are your general opinions on the Hamilton music scene, especially coming from somewhere like Guelph, and why do you continue to play in the city?
I think the thing that is both a blessing and a curse about the Hamilton music scene is how much of a mixed bag it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can find literally, I think, any type of genre of music in Hamilton, and I love that personally.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that I feel that can be focused and unfocused, and you can definitely see like the garnering of success through that. Like when LT the Monk, he is very clearly focused on what he does, and he got the success he wanted because of what he was able to do specifically with hip hop and rap, and I love that for him. It's something I guess that's a little trickier for, say, a band like Frantic, because we sort of fit into a lot of different genres and a lot of different wheelhouses, and it's because I keep taking from different things. Like, I think maybe even to more properly answer like the first question really is saying how Frantic is based in rock. There's some funk here. There's a lot of shoegaze that recently I got into. There's a lot of jazz style chords. There's a lot of theory. There's a lot of noise rock. I was definitely inspired a lot as a younger man by like a lot of punk bands and then a lot of post-punk bands, just in terms of like attitude and chord progressions and just how things sort of work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely a city that I think is so unfocused, which maybe as a kid with ADHD, that's what makes it so exciting for me. And I think get such mixed results, especially from audiences, which is what I hear the most, is that people sort of appreciate us, from what I've heard, the most, that we don't seem to stick to one thing, and that there's so much in here that you can appreciate. But then you hear them sort of ragging on like the other bands on the bill, or even like things that like come up like before they even get a chance to play. Like I think on our latest show we had a pop punk band, and I'm not sure how you feel about pop punk, Sarah, but that is a guilty pleasure genre for me.
Mm-hmm. I don't personally just interject. I don't know if we've ever spoken about this before, but I was a huge like MCR stan in like high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there's that. I never quite got into like Panic or like Fall Out Boy or anything. MCR was my thing, and it was kind of focused on just My Chemical Romance. But I was a big, big fangirl.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's my history.
Yeah, like that same band for me was definitely like Blink-182. So to hear the most, especially for, I think it was, oh God, I'm so bad with names, and this is like my curse.
No, yeah, no problem.
I believe it was More Underground, More Avenue. Excuse me. They are an underground band called More Avenue, and they actually got talked to by somebody like way before like the show even started, like a full hour. And I think, what did the person say to them that, oh, so it's like amateur night? And I was like, oh, okay, like you could say that. Whoa. If you listen, yeah, like you could listen to the band and just decide you don't like them or that you don't like us. That is perfectly like a reasonable thing to
it's fine.
Say.
Yeah.
But to just open up with, oh, so we don't plan on being very good, huh? It's like, no, don't fucking... Don't even lead with that. That's just awful, dude.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, so that's I guess, my thing with Hamilton is that it's big, but it's small, and at the same time, there's a lot of, like, conflicting, I guess, backgrounds and educations and, like, feels and, like, genres, and it sort of does make for this beautiful sort of bundle that just, like, if you go looking for it, you're going to find it.
Sure.
But I suppose if you're not open to new things, I think that is sort of like the like crippling aspect of what I think Hamilton is all about, which is just experimentation and that everything is welcomed.
Mm-hmm.
How people sort of like react is maybe what I think racks like the nerves of so many musicians that are just trying to try and do new things in the scene, is just that they should experiment and they should try new things, which even I've been doing in the last few songs I've written over just Rona.
Mm-hmm.
Because like usually how Frantic operates is that we'll write a song and then pretty much in the same month that we write that song, we get to present it at a show and just see how people like react,
mm-hmm.
which is something we can't do. And it's something therefore that I sort of just have to trust my gut and say that I'm usually my biggest critic. I'm usually somebody that I think in my own writing, I'm hard to impress.
Mm-hmm.
So when I find something, a chord progression, words that I can combine with these things, it's sort of like, okay, that took me a while because I'm being so careful. I need to try this out. So when we got to actually play a song which is unreleased at the latest show in November, What We Follow, and people were just slow dancing and moving in their chairs, and like I can see them just like directly in front of my face just having a good time, that's when I'm realizing I'm not keeping the song because I think it's the most fabulous thing and I think that people should be listening to it because it's my opinion. I see them enjoying it, and for that reason I'm keeping the song.
Yeah, totally. Speaking of, I mean, you mentioned it a little bit before. You mentioned some artists before, but who are some talented local musicians that you think deserve more spotlight?
That's a great question. I think that especially female vocalists in the city, I don't get to see enough of them, and I was really glad to have been asked to be a part of this night, which was the night of December 16th, which I unfortunately was too overwhelmed with schoolwork to be a part of. But some vocalists there, especially Alyssa DVM, or is it Ava?
Alyssa DVM now. Yeah. Yeah, she's rebranded. Yeah.
Okay, she's rebranded as Alyssa DVM. Hannah McFarlane, because I played not only on her graduating recital, but I was also supposed to be a part of that ladies' night.
Mm-hmm.
Julia Jones. And she's been doing great for herself lately in, like, the last couple years, too. Like, her singles are really, like, chef's kiss.
Yeah.
Katie Chadwick, she's also doing great. some other bands. Let's see. Hollowcore has always been doing just cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Woolly Mantis, I feel like, is just in everybody's wheelhouse. It's in everybody's conversations lately. Moe Grove, though they're not like a Hamilton band, they tour through Hamilton all the time.
Yeah.
Especially with Spencer from Moe Grove being a part of Woolly Mantis. It's so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing them like sort of just become like this whole neighbor-esque thing.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh my God. One band that like just blew my brain right out and out the door was White Queen Falling. Like, we actually played with them that night, the like November show. And I was just sitting there being like, oh, this is fantastic. I'm listening to this band like privately. I'm telling my friends about it. I'm telling you, Sarah, about this and all of your listeners. It's just such a big open pool. I think LT the Monk is definitely doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who I actually knew about for like a couple years, and he's actually like come out more prominently, but Park from CC, I actually knew about him. Through when I had like a Blue Notes job and I heard about him through there, and then seeing
that's
like,
random.
Yeah, totally random. And then seeing his stuff then, and then seeing what he's doing now, and I'm like, oh, dude, growth. I love seeing it. I'm going to keep watching you. And of course, to self plug, you should be listening to Frantic Lullabies.
There we go, guys. Go check it out. So we're gonna, those are all fantastic, and important to note that a ton of those, I mean the majority, are like from Mohawk music, so
absolutely
ton of talent coming out of there for sure.
More people should definitely be paying attention to bands that come out of Mohawk, because
it's
usually very sudden. Mm-hmm. And if you catch it, you should definitely be hanging on to it, follow all their socials, just, you know, watch them grow, because I personally saw like Woolly Mantis go from what they were to what they are now, and I am not impressed.
Oh yeah, get in early, guys. Do it. yeah. So we're gonna hit pause on this conversation for a quick second and play everyone listening a single from Frantic Lullabies. Insomnia is an early track in the band's discography about codependence, anxiety, and self-medication.
Jaw, my teeth no longer chip. Ever since I gave up sleep, a small price to pay, I'd say my conscience is clear. Yet I still find myself awake. Whatever drug I could have found to help me put my head down, I've tried. Believe me, I've tried them all. The concentration of my own efforts reads fatigue and eagerness. The cotton mouth strikes me at my core. I
For anyone just joining us, this is Hot Shots on Air, and I'm speaking with the GTA-based vocalist and guitarist of Frantic Lullabies, Madison Daniels. We just came back from playing Insomnia, one of the band's earlier tracks. Madison, can you describe the meaning behind this song for me?
Yeah, Insomnia was a very personal song, which I was really glad that people really, I think, resonated with, like, the most back in 2017, when I first wrote this song. It was a time in my life where sleep was pretty bad for me. I've had insomnia probably since I was a teenager, but the worst case I can remember was when I was 20. I hadn't slept for 4 days, mm-hmm. and it was a matter of just trying to get myself to sleep, and it was probably the worst undertaking of my life. It was, you know, like, there's a point in, like, the sleep cycle, or I should say insomnia, where it sort of, like, becomes like your body just shouting at you to sleep, and that you start seeing things, you start hearing things, you start to try to self-medicate in order to get yourself just in that, like, comfort zone of, like, sleep. And it was, like, a really rough patch, which I had then put into this song, and even a lyric, which I still get questions about, and I'm really glad that it catches listeners' ears, because at first listen, it doesn't really sound like it makes sense, where it, like, the lyric basically is, color my horizon, solid and full, and then the immediate next lyric is thoughts never seem to end, where one begins could easily be the start of the next. That's literally a callback to that like, previous lyric, meaning that essentially when under, like, the influence of insomnia, it's the hardest to string thoughts in, like, a linear fashion, and that it was something I was really trying to drive home, like, in this song, is that you, like, you really feel like you're losing your mind. So bringing that into it and just sort of ending it on that note of never being bored, I almost felt like if I had just been bored or had, like, my attention not on something for long enough, I could have probably dozed off. But honestly, I think that after 4 days, my body had just, like, sort of went into overdrive and just said, nope, we are crashing now. And it just worked.
Well, it's good to hear that you got over that hump. I mean, I've never dealt with insomnia personally, but it sounds like it sounds horrible.
It sounds, it was definitely something that a hyperactive brain really can fall into, I think, quite easily. It's something that I'm really thankful that getting into, like meditation, getting into, like, a sleep cycle now, just, like, behaviorally has become, like, a lot easier. But I echo anybody who is currently going through that, that if you are, just keep pushing through. And that if you can get, like, even just a few naps in, like, throughout the day, that's better than nothing, because you are going to lose your mind.
How did you meet the boys of Frantic? And I know the lineup has changed a couple times, but if you want to go over that.
Yeah, totally. I met all of them through Mohawk. The first round through with James, Jacob, Spencer, and Dermot was not all that surprising. It was very spontaneous, for sure, where Matt Woodcroft of Woolly Mantis comes to me asking me for a gig, like, if I can be in the lineup. And I was like, yeah, sure. And I just said yes. I didn't have a band. It was just me and assumedly this drummer named Paul, who was in the program at the time, but it was just me and a guitar and a voice. So I had basically just had, I think, about 2 months to just scurry around, hire these guys. And Dermot didn't even come into play until, I think, my second year. But that was really when we started taking the band a lot more seriously, was with that original lineup. And eventually we've played so many shows, we've recorded the single, we recorded, like, the EP with Rona, of course, coming through. It was, of course, apparent that us being in separate cities, going different paths, that we had, like, this amicable split, which had to happen, I think, because everybody was trying to do different things artistically, or just trying out different things entirely that had nothing to do with, like, music. And I've always said to the guys that, you know, like, this is a band. We, like, put music that just, I think, should, you know, be apparent for every band, which is your health comes first. If you don't want to be here, if you're not having fun, you shouldn't be here. Not because I don't think that you should be here, because you, of course, bring something here. That's why you're here. But if you have this personal drive or just something that you would rather be doing, I encourage that wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be doing that thing because, you know, I'm not like driving like a slave ownership here. Like, you are clearly like another person with like completely other like thoughts, opinions, and ideas, that if you want to go for that thing, I encourage you to just keep going.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you want to have like a healthy, you want to foster like a healthy communication system, and, you know, you want to know that, you know, you guys are friends, and that obviously the health comes first before, you know, creating product for the band, right?
Absolutely. And that whole side of it is definitely something we take a lot more seriously now with Frantic being as old as it is. And
yeah.
Something I've been nurturing and caring for so long that just, it's just sort of second nature to me at this point, that Frantic has kind of grown into a thing that I just keep putting things into it because I just have this natural output, it seems. And even James brought this up to me before, where if I haven't fully finished a song, I at least always have the beginnings of one. And James is somebody that can close songs off, like meaning to end them. Whereas James sort of has like the reverse issue of not being able to start songs, and then I can definitely take over there. So it's something that keeps coming up, and something that I'm happy that we always kind of have this way about us, that if something isn't done, at least in the first presentation, it usually always is by the ending, by the second.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Totally. Do you feel as though all of the members of the band, I guess, like originally and currently, maybe you're on the same wavelength, maybe it's changed over time, but do you feel as though you've all had the same vision for what Frantic would be?
I sort of think that at first what Frantic was definitely an attitude of uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
At first, we were really just trying everything we could because we thought it was cool. We thought that it was interesting, and we thought that it was sort of something that people weren't doing at the time, was just sort of molding more and more genres together as well as we could to like present it in a way that was still listenable, because there were definitely times where riffs and things just weren't working, things that just, you know, maybe didn't make any sense. And I'm definitely at fault for that more than once. But definitely the creative aspect of trying new things and then those sticking happened way more times than things that didn't work. And it was something that's definitely become easier now, and definitely has a good foothold now that I've definitely landed in genres I feel like I can start from and then expand on, most definitely, and constantly having to do with, you know, jazz like related chords and funk related rhythms, rock types of attitudes, and definitely some shoegaze, because like with the amount of pedals that both myself and James have to work with and experiment with, and like introducing Cam too, he's of course got his own wheelhouse of sounds that just has this whole like new dynamic, and especially like the way Tommy plays drums, it's a whole new aspect that I sort of have to rethink how to explain sort of what I'm doing, because I realize that there are major differences between Jacob and Tommy, and I appreciate them both heavily, but it's definitely got its own attitude.
Mm-hmm. 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 Totally. Yeah. Do you have a favorite Frantic song?
Oh, a favorite Frantic song?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. This changes. For the most part, I was a fan of Insomnia for a good couple years, and mm-hmm. then it sort of fell out when COVID hit, and it actually sort of like resurged as I've been Twitch streaming for like the better part of 5 or 6 months. And of course, with that, being able to put myself on another platform, I'm of course going to push music out there and let people know that I make things. So
you do.
When I did that, yeah, like my community got a hold of it, and I've got to hear like this resurgence of how like insomnia is like resonating with people. How most definitely Bouquet being my favorite song, to answer your question, it comes up in different ways how people are like interpreting this music, and how I even got to talk to you actually about like the release first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
How Bouquet sort of became the primary focus in the sense that it had the most to say about doing things without a point, almost.
Mm-hmm.
Doing things like without a point, especially in, I think, like relationships, and how that just sort of it comes back to bite you. So by the end of the song, you can tell that this narrator sort of did all he did just to come back to the original riff and just not really learn anything.
Mm-hmm.
So a warning in that way, which is why I think I love that song the most, is because it's sort of this warning that if you don't pay attention to yourself, don't pay attention to what you are, what you do, you sort of just end up repeating the same type of history, that being your own history.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. I think, yeah, without personal growth, without looking on the inside, you end up just repeating the same cycles, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of talk.
Very relatable. Very relatable. Yeah. Funny enough that you bring that up, because we are going to wrap up this episode with Bouquet. So everyone, look forward to that. That is coming very soon. And Madison, what can we look forward to seeing from you?
I have definitely something in the works, something I've been keeping pretty low-key for the better part of a year.
Ooh.
But I can definitely say that there is a project coming that you can look out for in probably like the next 6 months. If you find us on Instagram or follow us anywhere, pretty much you'll hear about our music. But I have been sitting on this long enough, and I'm definitely, if safety regulations allow us all to be in the same room to record this thing, you can definitely hear something from us very soon.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to it. And yeah, anybody who keeps up with like what I'm doing, I'm definitely going to be sharing whatever they're up to. And definitely go follow Frantic. Go follow Madison. Go keep up with stuff. Yeah. So Madison, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime. So again, you can find Madison Daniels on all socials under either his name or under his band Frantic Lullabies. And we're going to wrap up this episode with another single from Frantic Lullabies. Bouquet is about the anxiety and excitement of dating someone new.
Hey guys, this is Madison Daniels from Frantic Lullabies, and you're listening to Hot Shots on Air on Indie 101.5.
Can you recall? Right, happy to keep alive on the edge of my seat, happy to oblige, never cease to gravitate to something new.